all of the ancient texts, whether it's the Midrash or the Talmud or any of the other ancient writings, and especially the Christian references, make reference to the fact that the even in the Jewish references, it's identified that the Passover season will be the beginning of the days of Messiah, and that the season of Pentecost is the season of Israel, if you will, because that's when all of the benefits happen with regard. But that the offerings and the harvest associated with the Messiah is the barley, and the offerings associated with the Israel or the church, the offering is always wheat. And it's imperative to understand that barley was essentially the food for cattle. It was sort of like what I used to think of about black-eyed peas when I was little. Now, all of the things that we have read so often that happened on the Feast of Passover when the various armies were defeated and all that stuff, and we'll review that. Since it was associated with, that happened in the Passover season, since that was associated with the barley harvest, and the barley, it's the idea that the victories for God's people always come when God's people are poor, when the need is great, when they are eating the food of cattle. But it's yeah, and there's a whole bunch of them. But the whole idea is that this it everything in both Jewish history and in Christian history belies the idea that as a believer you are supposed to be successful or happy or any of the other quote unquote promises of God. And it was chiefly for the food for cattle and asses, was the food of the poor. It's what Ruth ate in the book of Ruth. The barley cake destroyed Midian it was eaten, but with his own dung by Ezekiel. It was used in the ordeal of jealousy, where a wife accused of adultery was the barley that was used. But more important is what Jesus fed the 5,000. Now, on the first Seder night, if we were doing things right in Passover, we would have read this, and it came to pass at midnight. And we'll see that each one of those things that came to pass at midnight had something to do with barley. And also, when you shall say a feast of Passover on the second night, had something to do with barley, with this mystery of, and barley is always associated with humility and emptiness and poverty and fasting and supplication and prayer, and instead of defeating people by strength and victory and armies and power. And so it's what I'm trying to, the essential thing that I want you to take away from Pentecost, or from Passover, is that the lessons of history are, number one, that God is in control. Number two, that if you are suffering and things aren't going the way you think of, you are blessed. because that's the hand of God. But at the same time, that things aren't going the way you want, money maybe lacking, and whatever. It's also the time that you recognize that since the beginning of time, God has been in control. And when you presented yourself as the living sacrifice, that means that now He is doing whatever is necessary for His purposes, and He'll never leave you nor forsake you. And so the whole picture of barley as affiliated vis-a-vis the poor, the needy, the weak, it's to me the most blessed takeaway from Passover, because it answers the questions of God's justice. When you look at, you know, the stuff that my mind would say that this, if I were God, I wouldn't do it this way. If I were God, I wouldn't hurt. That's for sure. And I wouldn't, you know, whatever your situation is. If you were God, you'd have perfect understanding. If you were God, you would everybody would respond to you with respect and dignity, and they treat you with honor and respect. And if you were God, the whole world would revolve around you. But that's not the plan of God. The plan of God is that you would suffer so that you would be able to comfort those who are suffering once you are comforted. The whole plan of God is about faithfulness in the midst of an incredible need. And so the idea of any casual reading, if you have any integrity at all when you read the scriptures, that has to be the answer, unless you take little half scriptures around and mold them together for your new the new gospel that you've created. But Passover, being over the years it's now become our favorite feast. We see its fullness and richness instead of just everybody putting on your Easter best and marching in the Easter parade and with your little bonnet on it. I didn't say that, nor am I. And let me just review these things. And this, you remember, you got to say it came to pass at midnight. We're going to do that for the benefit of our and for the others. I mean, like Alex has never heard it came to pass at midnight. So. On the first Seder night, you say
it came to pass at midnight.
Of old, many miracles did thou perform wondrously at night, in the earliest of the watches of this night. To Abraham, the righteous convert, did thou grant victory in the division of the night. Okay, now, the whole idea of at least the Midrash and the Zohar and the Talmud talk about how before Abraham went into the horror of great darkness and saw the victory in the covenant, that he ate the barley cakes because it came. No, we're not there yet.
One other thing, this that came to pass implies the very last moment of time when God did.
Well, no, it doesn't. Remember, listen, this is important. The Jewish day started at sunset, and so the last day. This when the sun went down at 3 was the beginning of the last day. We've only been in one day since then. And so the mystery of seeing the type is that all these things take place in the darkest of the night when nobody else except those that are experiencing them can see it. So it's like it's the hidden work of God that's taking place so that the world won't believe in him.
Yeah, it's hidden to the world.
It's hidden
because they don't understand.
So it's not the last minute in terms of this last day. It may be the last minute in terms of your understanding about it. So, but you got to remember, whenever you're thinking about anything Jewish stuff, and like there couldn't have any more Jewish stuff than Jesus. Is that, and you couldn't have anything more Jewish than the New Testament. And so you've got to remember that the day starts at sunset. That's the beginning of the day. Otherwise you get all screwed up and you're trying to figure out when Jesus was resurrected. Jesus wasn't resurrected on Easter morning. He was resurrected at probably 6:01 p.m. Everybody see that?
Yeah. Simple. I'm trying to figure out what...
6:01 p.m. If he was 72 hours after he was buried.
Yeah, okay. Because the day was just beginning.
Right.
But then they just showed up at the tomb.
Didn't show up at the tomb until morning.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Okay, now, of old... Many miracles did thou perform wondrously at night. In the earliest of the watches of this night, to Abraham the righteous convert, did thou grant victory in the division of the night.
It came to pass in midnight.
Well, that's when he experienced... Now, don't say it now. I'm just explaining. The horror of great darkness happened. That's what the division... That's where Abraham and you, as Abraham as the perfect Christian, got the victory, was in the covenant. You got that? You remember that? Thou didst judge Abimelech, the king of Gerar, in a dream of the night. Now, don't say it yet. This is when Abraham screwed up and told Abimelech that. What?
No, I'm
thinking. Hey. Hey. Told Abimelech. Abraham told Abimelech that Sarah was his sister again, and so he tried to use his mind, the natural mind, to get out of trouble. But the dream of the night, and again this on this night, Abraham ate barley cakes because it came to pass at Passover season that it frightened Laban, the Amorite, in the dark of the night. Okay. This is when, remember, Laban just screwed with who?
Jacob.
He's going to work for his wife. This is Harry's favorite thing in the Bible. He worked for his wife for 7 years, and then he bedded her, probably at dark, and he woke up, and in the morning it wasn't Rachel, it was Leah. Right. So he had to, behold, it was Leah. And I've said that a million times. I mean, a few times anyway. But, and then he had to work 7 more years for his true love. Does that sound familiar? How many of you first accepted in this mystery of God that you thought it was the bride, but it was really the whore of Babylon? That's the natural tendency, because you go from the world, you make a pit stop in Jerusalem, and you go right to, where do you go, Harry?
Babylon,
the land of cause and effect. And so when you finally wake up, you woke up, and you're out of the puppy dog, puppy love stage, and you wake up, and my God, this is Leah, this isn't Rachel. Anybody understand what I'm talking about? I think a few of you do.
Yeah, you go into Babylon, but you get Jesus as your co-pilot.
You think you do.
Yeah.
And I got to say it. That idiotic poem that I hate about the footsteps in the sand. That's about, I woke up and it was Leah. All right, then we're about to say it now. And Israel fought with an angel and overcame him at night. Or Jacob fought with the angel. Jacob had some problems. He fought with the angel all night until he told him his real name was the way of the snake. Then, and that was Passover, so they ate barley before. He ate barley cakes just before, or barley matzah. Now you can say it.
And it came to pass at midnight.
All right. See, this loses its fun when I have to explain everything.
It tell us about it.
The cadence.
Yeah. It's also more fun when you're drinking water.
See, if you remember, the test of your spirituality is if you can have fun without your wine.
Like I said, it's more fun when you're drinking.
All right. Let me think about this a minute. Let me see if I want to just go. We're going to go through it. Okay. The firstborn seed of Pathros, Egypt, did thou bruise at midnight. They did not find their wealth when they arose at night. The swift armies of Sisera, prince of Harosheth, that doesn't mean prince of, did thou crush with stars at night. Okay. Does anybody, everybody know exactly what all that meant? Huh?
Not the last one.
Which is the last one?
Sisera.
Oh, that was the Canaanite general that Deborah and Barak defeated when they ate the barley cakes. Sennacherib, the blasphemer, schemed to attack the chosen city, but thou didst cause his corpse to rot at night. The idol bell in his pedestal fell in the blackness of night. To Daniel the beloved was revealed the secret of the vision of the night. Belshazzar, who drank out of the sacred vessels, was killed that very night. Daniel, saved from the lion's pit, interpreted the terrors of the night. Haman the Agagagagite nurtured hate and wrote letters at night. Thou didst arise thy power against him by disturbing the sleep of Ahasuerus in the night. Thou wilt tread a winepress for him who holds vigil. Watchman, what of the night? He will cry out like a watchman and proclaim, morning has come and also has night. Bring near the day which is neither day nor night. Highest one, make known that thine is the day and also thine is the night. Appoint watchmen over thy city all the day and all the night. Mayest thou make bright like the light of the day the darkness of our night. Now, in all Jewish literature, whether it's from the Midrash or the Talmud or the Zohar or any of it, these times when it says, watchmen, what of the night? He will cry out like a watchman and proclaim, morning has come and also the night. Make known that thine is the day and thine also the night. Bring near the day which is neither day nor night. It's not talking about whether the sun's going to shine or the moon's going to be up. It's going to talk about in the days of Messiah that you will not need the same stimulus to see the mystery. For the day and the night are alike to thee. That is the definition of the days of Messiah. That's the definition that Abraham saw and knew. That's the definition that Isaiah saw and knew. That's the definition that Jeremiah saw, that Ezekiel saw. The days of Messiah. It's only the dullards who look only vis-a-vis their senses who think that the promises of God are the literal thing when, well, we're going to see the... whatever. We're going to see a new temple built over in Israel. No, we're not. If today you don't see the promise, you probably never will. If today you don't see the new Jerusalem, you probably never will. If you're not in heaven today, you probably will never be there. Well, that's the lesson of the barley cake, if you can really understand it. Amen? Everybody understand perfectly?
This phrase, and it came to pass, is like in the fullness of time, or God remembered. It's like it always heralds that which God has planned. Now it is time for him to do exactly the right thing in exactly the right way. This is, it's like, okay, bring up the lights, open the curtain, here it is.
Remember, you're partially. whenever it says it came to pass in the Bible, it means if it's good, it's extremely good. And if it's bad, it is unbelievably horrendous. And if you can look through the scriptures and see, wherever you see it came to pass, and it came to pass, then the idea is, if you're part of Him, it's going to be incredibly good. Maybe not to your flesh, but to the mystery of His kingdom. But the point, the takeaway from Passover, is that it is the harvest of the barley. And that's for His, that's for Him. I mean, it's about Messiah. Pentecost is about His church, is about the true Israel, about the barley is the food of the poor, food of the unbelievably poor, but it's the food of the cattle, the food of the asses. Well, that's good. That's good. And the wheat is the food of the royalty. So the mystery of it is, again, His humility, His emptying in every single area of the Scriptures. If you can take that away and understand it, then Passover has done its purpose. We didn't wear any Easter bonnets. Well, that's not true. Some of the people in the skits did.
Yeah.
Anyway, anybody have any? Everybody understand perfectly? I asked that before.
It's almost like you have to recognize your own animal nature. Part of that, you know, it's like, okay, you know, I am a brute beast, and if without the Messiah, then I'm just left in that place. So I'm eating that.
If you look at the world and at whatever is confronting you, then you're, Ecclesiastes says, then you are the brute beast. You are just like an animal. So does Jude, so does 2 Peter. And for his people, they don't look at, they see through, always and ever. So they're never troubled by what troubles the world. And if you're troubled by something, it is only the Holy Spirit telling you that your idol has been, your worship of your idol is out of order, and that's why you're troubled. Anybody understand that? You can never be troubled except as a revelation. I know, I'm doing it on purpose. You really understand that at the core? That if something troubles you...
Yes, I understand that.
Okay. Anybody else?
Or we'll just FedEx your ass up there.
FedEx. Hey, I did it. I fixed one of those.
Okay, Harry.
Put you in a Bible.
One thing that is about
the king, if you don't see the kingdom of heaven now, then you're not going to see it later.
That's why you take heed as to the light shining in a dark place until the one day dawn and the day star arise in your heart. I mean, that was said 2,000 years ago. The idea is that the day star to the disciples after Pentecost, it was the brightness of day in the middle of the night. And that so too, if God has chosen to reveal this mystery to you a little at a time, then the only thing you're to take heed to is the light. Because if you are have presented yourself without condition as a living sacrifice, then it is a sure bet that that light is there, even though sometimes you can't see it. But you know it's there because you saw it at least once. And so now you always take heed only to the light shining in that dark place until the one day dawn, the last day we're in, and the day star being fully arisen in your heart. Okay? All righty, take it big guy.